Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest today is Jessica Holloway. She is an instructional coach. She is also a policy leader and has been working in the Chattanooga Public School System. And she's also gotten a leadership and fellow from the local Chattanooga Public School Education Association. Jessica got the ASCD 2019 Emerging Leader Award, and she's a STEM Policy and Fellow Leadership Fellow for the Education Association. She and her family live in the Chattanooga area. Welcome to the podcast, Jessica.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk today.
Well, it's been great talking to you in the pre-chat, and we talked a lot about kind of your path to where you are now. Can you tell me a little bit about what you did to kind of get to where you are, having been an instructional coach for a while, and also what led you to apply to ASCD and become an emerging leader?
So I think when I spent some time after our pre-chat and I thought back to what was kind of the driving force from year one to year 15, it's really been about relationships. And in my early years, my husband served in the Army, and I taught in a school that was a high military population, and it was during a time of war. And it was a difficult time just on a personal level, but then also my students had parents or extended family members that were also serving at the same time. And I learned a lot about compassionate conversations. I remember one student who just would never turn in homework. I mean, they were attentive in class, they did fairly well on assessments, but this kid, it was like, I didn't know if it was an act of defiance or needed help, and just the kid wouldn't do any homework. And I remember seeing the student and his mom walk down the hallway for a parent-teacher conference, and he was one of five kids. He was the oldest. And I remember when I started having the conversation around his homework, I soon realized he was helping his mother tend to the other children because his father was deployed. And so his role in his home shifted in this situation. And so I became more aware of like my students and their life beyond the bell schedule, the typical school day. But then also I ended up just holding hands with his mother and both of us crying because we both were missing our spouses and understood just how difficult life was being at that moment. And so I really learned to value the relationship of getting to know the parents and being a partner with the parent. And I certainly didn't lower my expectation for the student, but I did had an opportunity to develop a different plan for them. So we worked out a different scenario of how the student could get the work done. And it was extended time, but for me, it was more valuable for the student to get the work done than to just throw the hands up and say, I don't have time to do it, or I can't do it. Mm-hmm. So I really, in that situation, I really learned about, you know, seeking first to understand mm-hmm. the situation, but also just, you know, there are ways you can connect with parents. It doesn't have to be anything so traumatic or personal, but building that relationship with parents is very helpful, and having that partnership with them to know that you're both wanting that student to be successful. I also, in that experience, I can distinctly remember just how powerful an interaction was with a custodian there. I had pulled up to the parking lot with a car full of supplies from my former school and a 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I knew no one. My husband was deployed, and I was getting ready to set up my new classroom. And a custodian came out of the building, and she said, "Oh, I'm so glad. Are you going to be a new teacher here?" I said, "Yes." And then she saw me struggling with my two-year-old who wasn't happy and needed a nap. And she said, "Honey, you just go on in and talk to the principal and get squared away. We'll handle this." Mm-hmm. And by the time I had gotten the keys and introduced myself to the principal, the custodial staff had moved all of my supplies in. Wow. And I mean, it was just like I teared up, and I was, you know, I said thank you probably 40 times. And she was like, she's like, we got you. We want everyone here to be successful. And I just thought, you know, they didn't have to do that. That's not in their job description. But that moment, that first interaction made me feel welcome from the moment like I exited my car and entered the building. And so just how powerful every interaction can be. And I love custodial staff. I love support staff in building. And I feel like those relationships are very important to develop. And they are some of the most undervalued members of a staff. And I try to make sure that I put forth effort to get to know them, to speak with them, and acknowledge just how much they do contribute to how a school functions. And yeah, it was just one of those powerful experiences that I won't forget. I mean, it was just so nice. It was just, I needed it in that moment. And after I taught in Clarksville, I moved to Chattanooga, and it was my first real experience in having a coach when I was in a teaching role. And I didn't quite really understand their role and how I fit into that until I had a coach who also taught one class, and it was the same grade level and same content area I taught. So not only was she a coach, but she was also my collaborative partner. And in that relationship, I really started to understand just how powerful having a coach really is. Because it was just so easy to get immediate feedback. I could ask questions. She wanted to talk about how well did the lesson go for you. I shared what was working and what was not working. It was just so powerful to have that kind of a collaborative partner as like a teacher, but also having a coach that will push and say like, "All right, try this out," or "I'm going to get someone to watch your class for a few minutes, step next door and watch me do this part, and then you can try it with your next class." And I really just, that's when I first started latching on to just how powerful this role of a coach is, and the power of collaboration as well, and building those relationships with your teammates and those within your own department, just how you can grow right there within your school building. And that's kind of, I guess, where the seed was planted for me with, you know, I found the value in it and thought one day I want to move into that role. I want to support other people. But I was really, it was early on in my career, and I didn't have my voice yet as an educator.
Yeah.
Like I didn't feel like I had enough traction and enough experience that I could, you know, support anybody or really contribute. But then I had someone come in and say, "You know what? You should really present at this conference that's coming up. You should share what you've been doing. I think it's powerful for other people to hear what's working for you in your classroom." And I was so baffled. I was like, "What, me? Me? You what? Think I should go talk to other people and share what I've been doing?" I was just so baffled at 4 years into teaching that someone thought I had enough, you know, experience and something to share. And I followed through and I presented at a conference, and people wanted to talk about what I was doing. They wanted to hear it. I was just so baffled. I was like, "Oh, like have something I can share. I can return the investment that others put into me. Mm-hmm. And it was so great to have these conversations with people at schools in another district, in my same district that I had never met before. And so I was like, wow, this is really nice to have these conversations with people. And, you know, and they would make suggestions, say, I did something similar. Have you thought about this? And I was like, wow, this is just great. This collegial conversation and growth and being around people that are like me and have the same thoughts and want to keep working in the same direction. And I think that's where I kind of became this professional development seeker. And I just kind of became like this, I want to grow, I want to know, I want to learn, I want to meet more people, I want to have these conversations. And I think that saved me from the frustrations of teaching. Mm-hmm. Because I was in that first 5 years of starting to feel the drainage on the emotions. How do I balance my work life and my personal life? I was, you know, I was a mom of small children. And so I was like, oh. But then I figured out, okay, if you build these relationships and you meet these people, you can share things and work smarter, not harder, mm-hmm. and learn from each other. And so I really think that was a launching point for me to say, okay, what I need for me as a teacher, I need these relationships. I need people who are going to help me grow. I need people I can exchange ideas with. And so I started doing more work. I joined some professional organizations, and I was fortunate to have administrators and principals who would support me going and learning. Mm-hmm. So this did, it does come at a cost, and they, you know, I had one that said, you do a lot of free ones. You do a lot around here. We'll invest in you to go further. We'll invest in you to go present. You we just ask that you bring back whatever you learn and share with the faculty. And that was before I even got into the coaching role. And I was like, no problem. You tell me the time, I'll be there. I'll share more than we probably have time for. And so I'm fortunate that I did have administrators and schools that would fund me going and learning and seeking out that knowledge, but I always did bring it back mm-hmm. and share with whatever school, whatever faculty I was with. And I just, that kind of just steamrolled. And as I got further into teaching, I was like, you know, I really think, you know, sharing with my peers, and I love to learn and I want to see others be successful. I think this coaching role is something that I want to try out and see if it'll work. And so I applied on a coaching position. It happened to be at the same school I was the teacher, and I applied and got the position. And it was in a weird time. We were transitioning from old state standards to new standards. And so there was a lot of, you know, change is hard. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of fear of the unknown, fear of what is this going to look like. And so I entered the coaching role in a high need, high stress situation.
Yeah.
Because we had this new set of standards that we're going to be held accountable for. And so I did a lot of work of, okay, what do you need to be successful? What questions do you have? If I don't know them, I'll find someone who will be able to answer those questions. And so I jumped right in on the coaching. But it was hard. I had established all new relationships with former, what were my teammates and coworkers. Mm-hmm. I now had to kind of reestablish new relationships as a coach. And it's distinctly different. And I had no idea. It was a whole new world when I stepped outside of my classroom and saw the view of a school as a whole entity and how all the pieces work together. And, but I wanted to work on that relationship piece. And so I really had to establish trust with them, trust to know that I'm there because I want you to be as successful as possible. And if you're not successful, I'm not successful. And so I take ownership. All of these students are my students too. So I want you to have all the support and what you need in order for everyone in our building to really be successful. And it takes time. Yeah. And I've had a lot of new coaches come in. I've been a coach now for 7 years, and so as new coaches have come in, I just said, give yourself time. Mm-hmm. Like, give yourself time to build that relationship. But you know, you can't just be, you're not there to get their Diet Cokes for them. Mm-hmm. But there is a way to small steps and start with the people who are willing to open the doors and let you come in. But just be vulnerable that I see every time I do a coaching cycle, it's an opportunity for me to learn just as much as it is. Like, I do not pretend to be an expert in every content area, in every, I mean, that's their classroom. Those are their students. Like, I do not pretend to have the answer to everything, but I'll help you think through an answer. I'll help you problem solve a situation. I will look up resources with you to figure out which one is the best. We'll go through that data and figure out where we need to work. But they know I'm willing to sit down and do the work with them. And they know that I want them to be successful. And so I do a lot of encouraging my coworkers and others that I work with, apply for this program. I nominated you for this because I saw this really great thing happening in your classroom. Like, I want to elevate others, how other people have invested and elevated me. And so I just, it's like a return, like pay it forward kind of situation. Because I've had some teachers say, I really didn't think what I was doing was that great. I can't believe you nominated me for this. And that several of them have gotten awards or made it onto committees and move forward in their leadership capacity, because someone once told me, like, I should be coaching myself out of a job. Like, I should be coaching teachers so well that they don't really need me anymore. It's hard to say that, but it is true in a sense. Good thing is we continue to get new teachers, so they still need me. I'm still around. And teachers, there's always growth. So even some of the highest performing teachers always have room to grow. And I actually find them to be the ones who seek out feedback the most, mm-hmm. and oftentimes don't get the feedback that they're seeking. So I try to, it's difficult. I don't know, for a lot of coaches, the time factor, you just can't get to everybody, so prioritizing. And I always try to make an effort to make sure I get to those high performers as well, because they need someone fueling them to keep moving forward, mm-hmm. or they're going to stop moving forward and having that flame of, you know, they're high achievers. They want their students to perform. They want to perform. They want to grow. But if they don't get any acknowledgement or any little push, they're going to stop too. So it's a lot of fueling that and developing those relationships. And I started noticing, though, I joined Twitter at a conference, like out of peer pressure, I'll just say that. They're like, tweet this, tweet that. And I was like, what is this tweeting? I can't handle this. So I finally it was one of those lunch breaks. I was sitting on a conference hallway on the carpet, and I was like, okay, let's figure out this Twitter situation. So I'm figuring it out. And I was like, oh, okay. Just say little things. You can follow people. Like, I'm following these famous education experts, and I followed the professional organization that was hosting the conference. I was like, okay, I got this. And then I became like a lurker for several years on Twitter. I was like, I'll just read what other people put. Oh, that's a great resource. I'll pull it. And then one day I was like, okay, I'm just going to try one of these chats. I'm just going to jump in. I'll try a chat. I was like, oh, this is nice. It's that conversation and feedback and ideas that I enjoy so much. But it was in the virtual world. It was on social media. And then I started participating in more chats. I started connecting with more people. And it broadened my whole realm of building relationships. There are people that I have built educational relationships with that I've never met in person, but if I know that they're an expert in this area, and if I've got a question, I can reach out to them, or they'll point me in a direction of someone they know. And so it just expanded my network and the relationships that I could build even further on social media. And I know people have their feelings one way or other, but I use my Twitter account just for, you know, professional purposes. So I don't do anything else except build my network. And I think that's important though for teachers, because it can be a very lonely job, because mm-hmm. you know, you're in your classroom, and you don't have time, a lot of time in the day, to just invest in those relationships and feel connected. So getting on social media, finding a Twitter professional learning network is a great way to do that. Getting in professional organizations, it's a great way to do that. And, you know, a lot of schools, a lot of educators do things on a local level to build, like, don't let them become disconnected, because I think the more you become disconnected, the more likely you are to lose that teacher from the profession. And mm-hmm. because you've got a normalized struggle. I mean, I help support new teachers that are brand new to the profession who come to our school, and sometimes they say they're okay, and I've learned to stop asking, are you okay? Mm-hmm. I've started saying, tell me about your day. And as they talk, they'll reveal things that they're struggling with. Because it's a thing, like, you don't want to admit you can't do something. You don't want to admit failure or that you're struggling. Like, nobody wants to admit that. Mm-hmm. But if you get into a meaningful conversation, if you have that relationship with someone, or if you're building that relationship with someone, tell me what's going on. It invites the conversation. It invites it in to uncover things that they're working on. And so I've learned, because they're going to say, yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm fine. Or they'll be like, oh, I'm not doing the best day, but we're working through. And it's, you know, it's that mask of take off the mask, especially if you're struggling. Like, take off the mask that everything's okay, because the reality is we've all been there. We've all had the day and the lesson that didn't go as planned. We've all had the challenging interaction with a student or a parent. We've all had those situations, and there's a wealth around you of people that can talk you through or problem solve. This is how you get through that situation, or this is how I handle it, or this is how I did it, but please don't do this because it did not work the way I wanted it to. Like, learn from other people's mistakes, because educators, I mean, there's so many of us that there's a wealth of, if you just tap into other people and have those relationships, it makes it so much easier. You don't have to carry that weight alone. You can have those conversations, and you can, you know, have some affirmation that it's normal to have a bad day. It's normal to have the perfect lesson plan, and then the reality of students wipe out that perfect lesson plan and have to start all over. I mean, I share with the new teachers all the time, like, I had a lesson, like, I thought it was beautiful when I typed it out in my mind, it was going to be so magical, and then those kids came in and they just did not do anything that I anticipated. And I remember stopping in the middle of the class and said, okay guys, we're going to scratch this lesson, we're going to do something different. But then I, at the end of class, I asked a couple of kids, I said, what went wrong? Like, this is how I envisioned it. What went wrong? And they were like, we did not understand that is what you wanted us to do at all. So I was like, okay, so I need to work on, like, clarity of expectations, maybe have some, like, checkpoints that this is what you should be doing. So, I mean, but being vulnerable enough to say not every day is perfect is hard to do, because I mean, I think it's just natural for us to want to perform and do well, but I've had a lot of people say, like, fail forward. Like, it's okay, you've had a bad day. Now what can you learn from it? What can you carry forward and do better next time? Mm-hmm. So, and I've been fortunate enough to be surrounded by a lot of great educators who are willing to have those conversations and normalize, like, if you never take a risk, there's no reward in the growing. So fail forward, figure out what you can do better next time. They've also been really great at giving feedback, but I also, like, I ask for it. Like, I want to know what I can do better, but I have a relationship with people that I invite the feedback, and that's hard. It's a hard thing because it's even actionable feedback's even hard. It's like, man, I thought I had it so good, but sometimes the feedback is just like, I've had people say, this is just one little tweak. It was great. Like, don't focus in on my one little tweak as a negative. Like, I'm just trying to give you the icing on the cake. Like, the cake is great, it's good, but here's just how you get a little extra on there. Here's the sprinkles on the cake. So, but I think just having those relationships with people are going to keep you so grounded and feeling like this is all normal, and keep you connected. And that's really why I'm a member in professional organizations. That's what led me to applying for the Emerging Leader Program with ASCD. I was looking for a continued growth opportunity. I wanted to become more active in that organization. And it definitely did not disappoint. I have made connections that have gone beyond into international connections, and people that I can seek out feedback from, share ideas. It's that whole continue to grow and ask questions and build those relationships to keep me excited and continuing to grow in the education field.
No, I think, yeah, you've really touched it all on, you know, relationships with parents, students, colleagues, and those outside of your own area, right? And I can attest a lot to just my own experience with Twitter as well. I was reluctant. I was at a training about 3.5 years ago, and they were like, oh, you have a lot of power on Twitter with being an educator, you know, have a lot of connections there, because I was just, you know, I'd only heard negative things about Twitter. So the same thing, I was as well kind of reluctant to join that, but it's been a great resource of just connections with people. And like you're saying, finding people at conferences, connecting with people from outside your organization, and just finding professional development that way. We've kind of led the same path in that sense, and just speaking at conferences and getting out there. And it was quite interesting to hear how, you know, you had only taught for 4 years, but then somebody pushed you. They got you out of your comfort zone, right? They saw that in you, that you had something to share, right? And I think some schools need more of those type of people that can help those who they see potential in, share and give back to others, because then that kind of just cycles, you know, keep giving back. And, you know, as people become more tenured and senior in the field, they, like you said, are helping those people that are coming into the field. And hopefully the teachers that you serve are now feeling like, you know, they're able to fail forward. They're able to have bad days, but, you know, that's not making them want to quit the profession, right? Because they have that support. So have you thought a little bit about your school, I don't know if they've made any decisions for the fall, but how did you in the spring do some of your coaching with your teachers during the shutdown? And if you are doing a hybrid type model, how will that look for that support of your teachers and maybe observations of classrooms? How does that look different during COVID?
Yeah, so it happened so fast. It was just one day we were in school and physical school, the next day we're not. And so I think I did a lot of, I'll say it's like informal coaching, more of a support role. Like, do you have a Google Classroom set up? Do you know how to record a video? Do you know how to get on your online versions of your textbooks? It was a lot of, it almost felt like the first day of school, but in the digital realm of, do you have all your resources? Do you have your classroom set up? Do you know how to check in on everybody? Do you know how to use the tools that we have so that way you can set up your instruction so students can learn and you can teach in this environment? And so I think that was mainly it in filtering the communication. This year, there's two coaches at my school now, and so we divided a lot, and she had a really great idea of making this virtual learning index where everything went into one place. Mm-hmm. So we were being bombarded with information almost on a daily basis, and so putting it all in one place, I think, was really a relief, because it's like, I know it was in this email, but I can't find it. So having one place, and so we would just add to it this resource here. Oh, this teacher showed us how to make a video and upload it to YouTube. Let's add it here so we can, other people who want to know that, they can learn from their colleague, and just putting it all together. And then also just saying, like, what do you need help with? Like, where can I help you? Do I need to look at a lesson? Do I need to check in on a kid for you? We did a lot of just checking in on our families and, are you okay? And do you have the resources that you need? And we're fortunate to be a community school. So we have a local organization that will help connect parents and family members to, you know, housing or clothing or whatever the need is that they don't have, it'll get them connected. So we worked very hard to make sure that our students and families, when they were at home, they had what they needed to be ready and able to learn in this new environment. And I think that's just the as we transition into next school year, and we don't know what it's going to look like yet. My district does put out some options and drafts of things, but it all kind of just depends on the data of where we are as far as how many cases we have, and is it safe to return to the physical school building, or do we need to do a hybrid or a blended model? Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be a lot of carryover of learning from in the spring into this fall. And so I've had conversations with several teachers just over the summer, and I've already met briefly with some of our new to our building, because that's the other thing, is we have new faculty members that we have to make sure some are new to the profession. So they're entering the educational field in a time of a global pandemic. I mean, it's a unique situation, a new, unique time to enter. And so wanting to make sure that they have everything they need to be successful and have all their logins, and trying to get to them early and support them before they ever have students in their classroom. Just trying to go ahead and say, all right, if you've never heard of Canvas, here's some professional development we have lined up. Go ahead and get familiar with it now, instead of trying to learn everything 3 days before kids start. That's just, it's an overwhelming amount. And so I really do encourage them to kind of just take it piece by piece and think about it while you're relaxed. It's summertime. I know that's a lot to ask of educators, and they don't have to take that advice, but if you just bank on the 3 days of PD before students arrive, you're going to be very stressed out when those kids show up, because that's just not enough time to have time to process and think and create. And so giving yourself, and you don't have to use all summer, but pick a few days and just say, all right, I'm going to do some work on this day, and I'm going to think about this, or I know I really have no idea what I don't even know what the word Canvas means, so I'm going to go to PD and learn about it on this day. And just trying to set yourself up to be, have the structures in place so you can think about the teaching and learning part of it. Mm-hmm. It's like coming in and decorating your classroom before the first day of school. So you've got to think in a virtual environment, how am I going to decorate my virtual classroom and get that set up? Because that's the other component. In the spring, we already had relationships with students and families when we went out. Mm-hmm. When we start in the fall, especially, I'm at a middle school, so we're going to have students and families transitioning into middle school that we're going to need to build those relationships with. And how do we do that in a virtual environment if we're not there face-to-face? So how do we make students feel welcome? How do we build those relationships with parents? And how do we get on the same page with everything? So just thinking first about like how to connect with each other and learning to connect, and then we can connect to learn later on. Then we can use those connections for learning. But just setting up virtual expectations. And so I had a couple, I said, you know what? You can do your, like, think about it. If you were in your classroom, what it would look like, what those expectations would be, and then how would those look differently in a virtual environment? Just make you a dual list, just in case. We may be in this scenario, that, or it may be back and forth. We may start physical school, and if there's an outbreak and we have to leave, then you already have this in place, and you can say, here are our virtual expectations when we do this blended learning. So I think adaptability, I think you're just going to have to be patient. You're going to have to give yourself some grace. You're going to have to give families and students grace that this is an unprecedented situation, that everyone is trying to figure out what's best for everyone. And so I anticipate there's going to be some mistakes, and we're going to have to fail forward in figuring out what's the best solution to whatever scenario we're in. But I have no doubt that educators are going to do the absolute best that they can do to set up an environment for learning for students. And, you know, we're going to get through this together, and it'll be one for the history books of talking of, yeah, I taught through COVID-19, or I started my education career in this situation. But I think there's things that we can learn about ourselves as educators, or learn about education in general during this time, that we can carry forward that are going to be best practices no matter what. And technology is not going away. So there are things that we can carry forward that, like, yes, I really like this part, or students found this to be really helpful and beneficial. I want to use this in the future, even if we're back to regular physical school, this is still something that really does work. And I want to, don't stop something that works just because you're in a new environment, continue that forward. So just taking an opportunity to learn, but I've reached out to those connections in my relationships, and I'm like, what does your reopening plan look like? Mm-hmm. What resources are you using? Do you have some protocols and procedures and expectations drafted for how students interact? Can I see that? Can, you know, just building on those relationships is going into unknown. What are other people doing, and sharing, and just supporting each other as we enter this new phase of teaching and learning.
Yeah. And I think it's so great that you are reaching out to those people that got hired, you know, now in the summer, even if, you know, the summer's on their own time, but just encouraging them, you know, take a look at this PD, you know, try not to do everything the last 3 days before school starts, right? They have the opportunity to get a little bit familiar with those systems. And I think, you know, having you as a support to just kind of reach out and ask them what they need is great to have those new for those new educators. So they feel like, you know, they're supportive before they've even walked in the building or had, you know, students on their roster. So no, I think, you've put a lot of points forward about how it's important to, you know, feel those connections and have, you know, colleagues just feel supported. And I think out of all the things that we discussed today, what is the one thing that you would really especially like listeners to remember?
I think something to remember is every interaction is an opportunity to build a meaningful relationship, and every relationship you have is an opportunity to grow and learn alongside someone else. And don't underestimate the value of that relationship piece, and go out and find your network. Find your people, find the ones that are going to help you rekindle your joy for education, the ones that are going to push you, the ones that are going to grow you. But you know, you're not in this alone. There's a big network of educators out there. Just find your way to get connected with them.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being my guest on the Out of the Trenches podcast. Where can people find you online?
I am on Twitter @HollowayReader. So follow me, say hi to me. I'll be glad to share everything I've got, and I'll be looking forward to making new connections and building those new relationships as new followers come along.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks.